Welcome to the next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. So, Graham, as we continue this mini-series on how to deal with AI in the next 100 days, we've got a really interesting guest this morning. We're going to look at AI and sourcing.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got a find stuff for their businesses, and we've come across an amazing new service called sourceready.com. So just as it sounds, sourceready.com, and we have its founder, Ricky Ho. Ricky, welcome to the next 100 days podcast.
Thank you, Graham. Thank you, Kevin, and it's great to be on the show.
Well, you hail from Hong Kong. You're frightfully young. You look like you're still at school, but basically, but you now live in San Francisco and you're running this new AI service. Give us some background, Ricky. How did you come across it? How did it come about?
Yeah. I grew up in a manufacturing family, stereotypically, and I've been, dealing with factories and retailers my whole life. And I think global trade in general is still a very legacy relationship driven kind of network. If you ask most kind of large retailers today how they found their factory, a lot of it is still through industry relationships and networks. I've been interested in supply chain my whole life. I studied industrial engineering for my undergraduate at UC Berkeley. I actually dropped out my second year to start my first company, which is also in the supply chain space. So I started a company called Tree Lab. And we basically helped large retailers better gain visibility into their suppliers, because we realize a lot of ERP systems that these big companies use is more of a system of record. Most of the valuable day-to-day operation still happens in email. So we created a much more flexible, collaborative system that retailers and suppliers can collaborate on. So our first company, we raised over $22 million from investors like Sequoia, GGV, Tencent, and I did that for over 4.5 years. I sold my company last year to a large private equity, and then we started Source Ready soon after. So this is actually my second company kind of in the supply chain procurement space. And I think like the inspiration for Source Ready is that I think right now with, the tariffs that are happening globally, and especially the US-China rivalry, we're going to see a huge shift of supplier diversification happening. Many retailers, importers are going to try to find suppliers in alternative countries, right? In Brazil, Vietnam, Mexico, you name it. But I think the challenge today is that it's actually very difficult to find information about these factories and suppliers. Many factories are not the most digital. They don't even have a website. It's very hard to even find information about them. And kind of our inspiration is like, how do we create the world's most comprehensive and accurate supplier database by aggregating data from, different government data that we can acquire, such as customs data, trade show data, Dun & Bradstreet data. And then using all this data, how can we create a better search engine? So imagine you're, a business, let's say in the UK, that you want to, you want to source, electronic components with, certain certifications that you can export to Europe. So our scenario is you can just type in a prompt and say, hey, I want to find suppliers outside of China that can make this specific product with these certifications. And our AI will search through, millions of suppliers and, help you find the exact suppliers that match your criteria. So kind of that's our goal. And that's where we see the industry moving towards.
Well, there's so much in that. You're not just relying on the internet. You're building your own a library or I don't know what you call it, knowledge store of all this data that you mentioned, Brad Street and various other things, and you've put that together, and the prompts obviously look at that library and bring back a certain amount of options. So presumably you've got to structure the prompt itself. I mean, you come into your service. You're not an immediate prompt genius. So basically, how do your users take best advantage? Because we know that the better you are at prompting, the better results and so forth. So are there any things that you do to help your users get better results?
So I think there's a couple things. Number one is we already pre-structure the supplier data. So unlike, if you were to use ChatGPT or these general chatbots.
Sure.
Their data is reliant on, just text data or web data that they're able to scrape. But when you're trying to find a supplier, you want deeper information. You want product images. You want the supplier's contact info. You want to see if the supplier is a good match for your requirements. So I think fundamentally, first is being able to aggregate and create a high quality structured data set of suppliers. Once you have that data set, the second part is actually creating an AI agent that understands the best practices of sourcing. So, I think the interesting thing about sourcing products is that most people that source products are not actually procurement or supply chain professionals. If you think about the average kind of business owner that's doing less than, 2 million or 3 million a year, they're not going to be able to afford to hire, a full-time procurement or supply chain professional. So oftentimes they're just doing this themselves. The problem, however, is that most business owners, because they're not professionally trained, they don't know how to calculate tariffs or understand, okay, for this kind of product, should I go to Bangladesh or should I go to Vietnam or should I go to China? And even when you do select a potential supplier, how do you know how to negotiate? How do you know what price is reasonable? So I think this is where AI can really provide a lot of, we kind of trained the AI agent to provide the industry best practice so that you don't have to be a professional and know exactly how to prompt. We're going to pre-build a lot of kind of the best practices within the AI agent
Are
so that after
you,
you, yeah.
sorry, Ricky, to cut across, but I'm thinking that if you've built the agent and the
Yep.
and shall we say the background prompt. So basically,
Yep.
you what's going to come through is up to a point. It's I'm feeling Google here, as in oh right, I'm Google will give me the people that they want to give me because basically
Yep.
there is a bunch of people who've paid them.
Yep.
Have you got that kind of model within Source Ready, or is it slightly different? Is it a lot different?
So I think Google search is an actually a great complement example. So we index data even though suppliers don't know that we're indexing their data. So what I mean by that is, I don't know if you have you guys heard of Alibaba?
Yes.
They're the world's most popular supplier directory. So whenever people want to find factories, traditionally they go to Alibaba. Alibaba's business model, I don't know if people know this, but they make 95% of their revenue from supplier advertising. So when you search for a product on Alibaba, the suppliers that rank on the first page are not necessarily the best suppliers. They're the ones that pay the most money to be sponsored on the first page. The problem with that, however, is that it's heavily biased, right? Let's say you want to find premium t-shirts and you want to find a factory. You don't want to just find the supplier that pays the most money to rank on the first page. You want to find the supplier that's the most reputable, that actually has good quality. And the problem with making money from advertising is that it's very hard to be unbiased. So our business model is very different than Alibaba. We suppliers don't register on our platform and pay for advertising to rank. We index their data whether they like or not. So we crawl all this information from all these different sources, and we rank the suppliers based on objective truths. So for example, if you were to in our system say, "Hey, I want to find premium quality t-shirt suppliers." Well, how do you gauge premium? Well, the way we would rank premium is we would look for suppliers that currently work with premium brands. So because we have import export data, right? So if I know this supplier currently exports to, let's say, Hugo Boss or Tommy Hilfiger or a brand that is known for quality, then it's most likely that this supplier is going to be, relatively a quality or a supplier that is known for quality. And because we don't make money from factories kind of paying us to be on it, the ranking in our system is completely objective. So you could think of our business model more of a buyer-centric model where the buyers pay to gain access to our data, but with that, they also get the benefit of a bias-free, objective kind of search engine.
Right. And having f opened an account with you this morning, I wanted to test the engine itself just by finding out whether or not my company would surface. And because in the UK I provide high net worth data, I asked the question, well, where do I find UK affluent data? So it wasn't quite high net worth, but it interpreted that, and somewhere in the answer, my company was cited. So basically, from that point of view, clearly you're looking around the UK, you're looking for that term, and that that came up. Doesn't necessarily mean the next thing's going to happen. They're going to get in touch with me and buy something, but they could. So,
Yeah.
what's going through my mind is that how do I make personally, from a company point of view, how do I make the best use of this great product that you're developing? It really is. And I've got a follow-up question, which is, how much do I pay as somebody who's going to buy that?
Yep.
And how much do I pay as a supplier to you? So presumably you're a bit like a bank, you're
Yeah.
taking it from both ends and living in a palace in
Yeah.
San Francisco. So I mean, your palace is
Yeah.
getting bigger and bigger. You probably have a palace in Hong Kong as well, won't you? So just in case you're in that side of the world. But so tell us about both the supplier,
Yeah.
shall we, cost prices and
Yeah.
the buyer cost prices.
So I think right now our business model is mainly focused on monetizing the buyer and not the supplier. So we actually currently don't make money from the supplier. Similar to how Google will index your website whether you like it or not. Like you don't have to pay Google for your website to rank on Google, right? Similar logic is we index all this supplier data from all these different sources of information. And then the buyer, for you to kind of use the system to search through the platform, you have to kind of pay a subscription cost. But our platform is very kind of cost effective in the sense that we have a free version that you can do basic searches with. And then even the pro version is like a couple hundred dollars a month. So it's not supposed to be kind of a very expensive enterprise tool that only very big companies can use.
Got you. So a couple of $100, you say, a month. So basically, what's that? Less than £2,000. So basically, so you get that for an annual. Now you can't buy a professional to do this sort of work at £2,000. Probably not even for a couple of days, Kevin. I mean, you probably charge a huge amount, wouldn't you, for your services?
Well,
So two.
exactly. And seeing the size of some of the procurement teams that I've worked with that are buying stuff, procurement can be an expensive function to run. And seeing a tool like this that perhaps you could run for $200 a month, if you're buying a lot of stuff, that's going to be a big value to you. I like the idea as well that there's a free version so that people like you and I, who are possibly only after one or two things,
Yep.
they will be able to drop in on the bottom end and take advantage of this tech. I like that business model.
Yeah, and I think like the way we think about this is that there's different types of sourcing requirements depending on the scale of your sourcing operations, right? So let's say if you're a procurement team at Walmart or one of the big retailers, you're not just looking for factory information at a very surface level. You want to look at compliance data. You want to see, is this factory currently being sanctioned by any major government? Are there any risks with touching this factory? So this is the more advanced data that we have in our pro tier. So I can do sanction screening. So before I work with a vendor, I can check, okay, first of all, is this supplier being sanctioned by any major government? Two, not only can I check that, I can check, do they have any ongoing lawsuits? Are they buying materials from any supplier that is sanctioned? So not only can I check if they are sanctioned, I can check if their suppliers along any of the risks along any of their purchases are being kind of
That's smart.
sanctioned. So
That is super smart, Ricky.
I think that would be kind of the advanced tier. And then for small businesses, I
Mm.
think the main thing that they want to see is, hey, I want to source a product. I want to find the best price and the best quality for what I need, right? And one of the things that we think is hugely valuable is actually automating not only the search process, but also the communication process. So one of the most time-consuming parts of sourcing any product is negotiating and communicating what you need, right? So let's say you wanted to source, this t-shirt, and I gave you a list of 10 factories. The traditional process is you email these 10 factories, you send them what you need, you ask them, hey, what is your best price? What are your payment terms? What is your minimum quantity? And a lot of these factories are in Asia or in China. There's a time difference, there's language barriers, and teams waste weeks going back and forth with these factories. And I think what AI is really going to help with is automating this repetitive communication. You don't have to ask the same question to 10 factories again and again. Just have AI do the work, and that allows you to kind of scale your outreach. So instead of only reaching out to 5 or 10 suppliers, just have AI reach out to 100, right? And from that 100s have AI summarize which suppliers are going to be the best fit for whatever you're looking for.
One question comes to mind. Excuse me. It is, do you you mentioned the fact that you've kind of got the compliance side of this, which is really important because you want your supply chain to be clean, especially if you've got well certain brands. But the one thing that's going through my mind is, do you have any almost like post-purchase data? So things like Reddit and things like this, where people are talking about bloody this t-shirt I bought or these t-shirts
It's
that I bought,
horrible, it's good, it's
horrible. And that then becomes another aspect of the rankings that you provide. Is that something that I'm sure you've thought about it, but is that something that features?
So we currently have a feature in our system called kind of AI product research. And what we do is we integrate social media data along with we crawl review data. So if it's an e-commerce product, we can see what is the sentiment of this product. So yes, that is kind of included. However, I do want to preface this by saying a product, whether it's negatively reviewed, is not necessarily the manufacturer's problem, right? Like it could just be that the design of the product was flawed, right? That has nothing to do with the factory. It's just like the retailer did not set the right product position. So we're not necessarily going to penalize the factory if the final consumer says it's a bad thing. But I think what you mentioned there is something that we do really leverage is basically generating supplier personas based on the type of buyers a supplier works with. So you could imagine a factory that primarily works with a brand like Hugo Boss or Loro Piana or I don't know, like more extreme, like Louis Vuitton, these very high-end luxury brands, they are going to be very different factories than factories that primarily work with a Walmart or a Kmart or Costco, right? So one thing that we really look at is based on the import-export data that we're able to acquire, we generate something called a supplier persona, based on the type of customers a supplier primarily works with. Because the problem in this industry today is most things that you want to qualify a supplier for are very subjective. So quality is very subjective. If you ask a factory, hey, do you make really premium quality products? Every supplier will tell you, yes, we make the best quality products. But in reality, it's a spectrum, right? There are certain factories that are more focused on cost. There are certain factories that are more focused on premium quality. And instead of just taking self-reported data as is, and we're going to look at the persona of the types of customers they work with.
Oh yeah, that's fascinating. In my that my one of my brands is Microyes, and we resell MechLab's AI, and part of that is the other way around of building personas or like AI customer simulators, which is it's almost like, am I marketing or does my marketing fit this particular persona? So if I'm a Louis Vuitton ideal customer profile, is my advertising, then my next advertising going to fit with that profile? And having that sort of circle of conversation that their prospects are talking about them and so forth, it's improving that all the time. You're doing it on the other side. You're doing it on the side that says, I'm actually trying to buy things. I want a supplier persona. I super smart. I mean, I am so impressed with the work that you've done so far. How long did it take you, Ricky?
We're a year and a half in.
Wow. But obviously your first business and your legacy of working in factories and so forth, you've got a lot of, you're not the, are you, sorry, you are the owner, aren't you? Or, but you ha are you a co-owner or the sole owner?
So obviously we have venture capital investors as well, and I have a co-founder. So I'm not the only owner of the business, but I am the main founder and CEO.
And your co-founder, does that person have the same or a similar background to you with their knowledge, or is it a different
So
skill?
we built the previous company together. So he was also my co-founder in the previous business. So we've been working in supply chain for over almost a decade now.
Right.
And he before joining my previous company, he used to be a senior AI researcher at Microsoft Research.
Right.
He's very technical on both the technology front and kind of on the supply chain front. But I do think like this is an industry that is like underlooked. Like there's not that much innovation that happens in supply chain technology, even though it's like one of the most impactful areas that we touch every day, right? If you think about the most of the technology companies in this space, they're like SAP, Oracle, these legacy companies that have been around for 40 years. And not to say they're bad or anything, but I think the focus area traditionally has been more on these like big enterprises, and it's like kind of process management.
Sure.
And I think like there, with AI coming around, there is just so much opportunity to help small to medium-sized businesses, especially in this world of, where the global supply chain is dynamically changing all the time.
But I think my reading of that statement is that the environment that we're moving into, whether it's the next 100 days or the next 100 months, you are certainly going to be finding that the type of approach that you're developing and the companies who are using your approach, they won't need that big on enterprise system. And so these mid-market providers are going to have to change, because I'm not about I mean, Kevin, you've worked for some of these bigger companies, but for me, the way I see it as a marketer, I'm thinking, oh boy, the power that you're harnessing with the sort of specific data set and the knowledge that you're developing and that sort of circular improvement all the time. These guys, they're asleep at the wheel at the moment, I think, because if they're selling an enterprise system that is, shall we say, dated, and it kind of started AI, you've got to think, crikey, are they keeping up? But I might be being a little bit over the top.
I think that's a really interesting point, Graham. And dealing with fintech, I'm dealing with the sorts of systems that are coming along as successors to the big Oracle SAP ERP systems. There are a lot of emerging accounts payable procurement solutions coming along, but they're still very much geared at the old process of you place an order, you pay an invoice. You set a customer account up. And I'm looking at the smaller company, not the big retailer that's necessarily buying stuff, but the smaller company. It's not uncommon, because procurement is coming out of accounts payable, that somehow the responsibility of the CFO also seems to be taking on procurement. May have some procurement staff working for the CFO, but where does it come from? It's because accounts payables in that area. The next thing you're looking at is supplier risk. Well, the supplier risk you've traditionally looked at is, hey, what's going to happen on the payment side? Are we going to have a cash problem here? We've got suppliers. What's the risk of these suppliers going out of business and so on? So it's very much the credit risk side of it.
Well, I was going to ask that earlier, Kevin. That's a good point, because I previously I worked for Equifax, and one of the things that I wanted to ask you is credit data or business credit data in, built into your system, or is it something that you kind of swerve by?
So that is one of the data sources that we are actually in the process of integrating. Dun and Bradstreet is one of the data sources that we look at. But apart from that, we're actually more or less currently focused on compliance risk, because I think that is where sourcing and importing products right now has the biggest risk for importers, right? So, an example of this is Xinjiang cotton. I don't know if you guys know this, but like for because of forced labor, the U.S. started sanctioning all the kind of companies in Xinjiang that make cotton. And as you know, most of the world's cotton actually comes from China, from Xinjiang. So there's a lot of downstream effects of this that people don't realize. Like, let's say you buy some t-shirt from some Chinese factory. Most people don't know where that raw material is coming from, right? And you're indirectly exposed to this risk, because if the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol does a spot check on your product, they can do DNA testing on that t-shirt to find out, is that t-shirt using Xinjiang sourced cotton? And if you get caught for that, not only does your thing get stopped at customs, you get a fine, and you could be down hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you can argue with customs and say, hey, I didn't know this. Like, I didn't source anything from Xinjiang. But they don't care. That they don't work based on your intent. They work on what is the final outcome. So I think the value of AI is kind of democratizing this, because if you look at like large organizations, they have entire compliance teams whose job is to do the screening. But if you think about your average small business or medium-sized business, they don't even know to do this. They don't even know what Xinjiang sanction is. And there's so many different sanction rules now. And I think like one of the things that I think AI is really going to help with is it's going to take these large functions that only big companies have and democratize this so that small, medium-sized businesses don't need to hire 20 people to do this job function, right? They can just use a tool, pay a couple hundred bucks, and just run a screening on a
So
particular vendor.
I'm starting to warm very much to your product and to what you're about to do to the world. I mean, 18 months in, and with backers there who on your shoulder, what's the kind of thing that they've said to you that you've thought, hold on a minute, I've got your money, but you're not going to tell me what to do? Is there a conflict there that you've got with your venture capitalists? Are they saying, come on, Ricky, we want you to do X, and you know you need to do ABC first?
I think generally not right now. I mean, just like how VCs are very selective on what companies they invest in, companies are also very selective on what partners they get in business with. So I think, when we chose the partner that that could invest in us, we had to make sure that our vision is aligned and we're both moving in the direction that we want to. And I think another thing is that I think our incentives are quite aligned because we do want to build this into a very impactful business. Like, I don't want a quick exit. I want this product to be utilized by millions of users. And I think that is in the same alignment as an investor's interest. And I think like what I see as exciting in this opportunity is that in procurement and supply chain, there's just a general lack of tooling for small to medium-sized businesses. So if you ask the average, person that does importing, a small business, what system do you use to do it? Most people will tell you it's either Alibaba, Excel, email. Like there aren't really like professional tools built for SMBs. And obviously at very large organizations, they have SAP, they have all these different compliance tools that they spend millions of dollars every year on. And I think what is going to be very interesting in the next 5, 10 years is how all of this tooling is going to get democratized and be made available to all the millions of businesses that do all this importing every year. And I think that's what excites me.
Now, Ricky, one of the things that we've covered on this podcast before is a couple of companies we've come across that train individuals to buy stuff from factories in mostly in China using Alibaba, then
Agents, right?
place them on Amazon to resell using Amazon Prime, Amazon Warehousing, and so on. Now, is this a tool that is targeted at those people? Or are you thinking, no, this is about larger businesses who want to produce a lot of stuff?
So we currently work with both types of users. So we have procurement teams at large companies using our tool to do compliance checking, supplier discovery. But we also have tens of thousands of users that exactly match the specific criteria you're talking about, which are small individuals or small companies where they're importing products from China or wherever and reselling on either Amazon or these different channels. That's e-commerce. You just describe what e-commerce is, right? And if this is the most common startup in the world. So if you ask like what is the most common business that anyone starts, it's retail. It is buying stuff and selling stuff. That is the most common business that one can start. But as you know, the Western world does not have manufacturing. You can't make anything in the Western world basically today. So you basically have to import this from Vietnam or China or whatever country it is. So importing and finding suppliers is a very common thing that happens millions of times across individuals and businesses. And I'll just tell you a statistic. I don't know if people know this, but Alibaba.com is the world's most visited B2B website. And you can Google this. It gets 150 million visits a month. Like for a website that's just like finding factories, you would think it's quite niche, right? It's like something that is not that visited, right? I mean, only some people use it. But no, it is more visited than any B2B website in the world. It is more visited than any SaaS company, any software company that you can think of. And yeah, that's just an amazing statistic that tells you just how many people are finding factories every day.
Is it likely that an Alibaba would be picking up the phone and giving you a call, Ricky, and saying, by the way, We could do with you as part of the Alibaba Enterprises. Here's gazillion pounds, or dollars or whatever. Is that part of, is that an exit that you're thinking? Not that you said earlier, you didn't really want to see that as an exit, because there's that side to it. So there's a comment on that. But also, if you, and I would recommend that you don't go early on that, because I think, you're potentially the biggest opportunity that you have is to take the Alibaba balloon and put a pin in it. Because I think the more that they, shall we say, that you can actually almost like become a direct competitor and possibly usurp them at some stage. And I think that then is a massive opportunity for investors around the world to be thinking about you anyway. But sorry, I'm overwriting your answer. You might have a different answer. So
No, yeah,
would you see that as an exit? And if you don't, then what do you see as your future?
I think Alibaba would not. I mean, okay, there's a reason why they haven't done this. I'll first preface this. Because selling ads is a very sexy business. Their margins are amazing, right? Like suppliers pay hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to rank on Alibaba. So this is not a business model that they would easily give up. And secondly, Alibaba is a Chinese company. Their roots are in China. And our thesis is that supply chain is going to be way more diversified in the next 5, 10 years. China is and was kind of the world's factory. But I think moving towards the next 5, 10 years, no one is going to say, I'm only sourcing out of China. People want to, find suppliers in alternative countries because of what's happening in the world. And that's where Alibaba is really, that's kind of their challenge now, because you can't find a factory in let's say Belgium on Alibaba. You can't find a factory in Mexico on Alibaba. And the thing is, what's interesting is most countries don't have websites like Alibaba. So I was talking with another a customer of ours, and he was telling me like he's in California and he wanted to find a supplier in California. And he said like, it's so much easier to find a factory in like Ningbo, China than it is to find a factory in California, even though he's in California. It's because like they're just most countries don't have websites like Alibaba where factories can advertise themselves. And as a result, this is part of the reason why people source out of China, because Alibaba has done a great service to Chinese manufacturers, right? They made it easy for people to find them. But that is not the case for most of the world. If you wanted to find a factory in Peru tomorrow, I can tell you that is going to be very difficult. You're not going to find it on Google. The factory might not even have a website. And this is why if you talk to procurement and sourcing teams all over the world and you ask them, how do they find supplier contacts? Most of it is through relationships. The Walmart person is asking someone else, like, hey, do you guys know any factories in Peru that are good in clothing? And they'll be like, yeah. We worked with them when I was previously at this company here. Here's the factory contact. Go contact them. At big companies, everyone knows each other and they can do that. But imagine if you're just some regular Joe in England and you don't have these relationships and you want to find a supplier in India or in Peru or in these hard to find countries. Most likely it's going to be very hard for you to find that. And I think that's where the opportunity is. How do we kind of democratize that data?
There are some big political, geopolitical things that are in your favor. Well, let's start with COVID. That probably changed the game a little bit, because that made people saying, hey, my supply chain has to be in America or has to be in the UK, whatever it is. Everybody's saying, look, we can't have that again. And then th there's now this sort of geopolitical thing that Trump wants to have the whole of the sort of Americas, and there's a division going on there potentially anyway. Hopefully less a bit short of a frightening world war and everything, but basically there is a division going on in the world, and that favors your business, doesn't it?
Yes, the more fragmented the supply chain, the more value there is in a tool that can make that entire complexity less complex, right? Because if everyone just sources out of China, the need for something like this might not be as urgent, right? I can just go to Alibaba and just find something. But if today you can't do that anymore and you're like, hey, I can't just source everything out of China, then you have to think about, okay, then how do I find a supplier outside of China? That's when a tool like ours, has a more urgent need.
Is a product going to be restricted to manufacturing, or are you sort of, have you got other I don't know what other supply requirements there would be.
Yeah, I think services generally is not something we have thought about touching yet because it's like a whole different industry. Like
Sure.
if you want to purchase software, for example, like we're not going to be like a soft, we're not going to aggregate software vendors, right? But generally it's physical goods, right? But physical goods does not mean factories. You could be distributors, you could be a wholesaler, you could be a trading company. You don't have to be a manufacturer to be selling, physical products. So we also index a lot of, distributors and wholesalers all over the world as well in our database.
So, Ricky, you could be modest about this, but are Kevin and I interviewing one of the next billionaires in the world?
Wow. Well, thank you. I mean, thank you for the for the. I don't know. I don't know what to say.
No, I well, I just think you're really onto something. And anybody listening to this who doesn't think Ricky's onto something, maybe there's a question that I haven't thought about that. And I guess I'll ask you the question. What's your Achilles heel?
I think changing user behavior is very difficult. Like people are used to going to Alibaba and directories. And educating the world to say, hey, Ali, you shouldn't just be using Alibaba. You should be trying out this new way of sourcing, is the educational process is going to be the uphill battle. And this is why we have a free version and why we want to make the barrier to entry as low as possible. And this is why the user experience looks like ChatGPT, because we want the user to not have to relearn how to use an AI tool. So I think the distribution is going to be the uphill battle. And hopefully, there are things in our favor that can help us get there, but I think the product needs to be not just 20% better than Alibaba, it needs to be 10x better. And I think that's the advice that I've gotten from a lot of other founders. Like if you want to change user behavior, you can't just build something slightly better because people, if you build a product that's like 10% better, like people don't want to like relearn things. You have to build something like actually 10x better at least for people to like actually get their attention. So I think ChatGPT is one of those examples of like people aren't really using Google search anymore. Like, most people go to chatbots like Gemini or ChatGPT because it is 10x better than looking at a list of links, right? You can just literally ask the AI, it's going to give you a structured response personalized to your question. And because it's 10x better, you're willing to change your behavior. But imagine if ChatGPT was only 10% better than Google. I think Google would still be the default thing that people go to because their brand is just too strong. And I would say Alibaba is the same example for us. Like Alibaba is this behemoth. Everyone, when they think about finding a supplier, goes to Alibaba. If you want people to say, hey, wait a minute, let's try out this other thing that exists, you can't just be slightly better than Alibaba. You can't just have slightly better data than Alibaba. You have to be much, much better, both from a user experience perspective and from a data perspective. I think that is going to be what we need to achieve.
Yeah,
I
you're.
like that you're indexing it in a different way. It's not supplier advertising that's going to get you to the top of the list. You're looking genuinely at a quality and getting the factory that's going to supply the stuff that you need in the best way. But I love the way you've introduced a whole new thing into the game here, and that's risk. Because if I'm sitting here in the leadership team of the company, I'm talking to my investors. My responsibility as possibly the CFO or the if there is a head of procurement in that position is, how do I de-risk this? How do I show that I've thought about what can go wrong here? How can I show people that this is going to work? And one thing is saying, oh, we're buying at X, we're selling at Y. Great, we're going to make a lot of money. But no, if there are quality problems, if there's a delay in the process, if one of the suppliers goes out of business, I'm not going to make that big margin. There is always a risk on that. And I think the game from where I look at it here is de-risking, absolutely de-risking.
100%. And this is why I think physical goods is something that, like, messing up an import is much worse than choosing the wrong software. And the reason is because you can't command Z that kind of decision, right? If you were to buy $100,000 worth of some product and your product gets seized at the U.S. Customs agency, you can't command Z that. Like, that money is down the drain. And I think this is where risk becomes super important, because even if there's only 1% risk, Over the span of 3, 4 years in business, at some point you're going to step on that mine, and that could be your entire year's profit gone. Sometimes you can even bankrupt your entire business because you get a huge fine, or you slapped on a huge tariff that you didn't suspect, and your margins are just gone. So I think this is where supply chain is really an interesting sector where risk is super, super important before deciding what supplier you work with.
We've also got that problem with social media. You get 1% wrong. The customers that are affected by that 1% going wrong are going to be talking about it all over the socials. And its effect is going to be far bigger than 1%.
Exactly.
Ricky, I'm sure we could keep you up at night. Now you're in San Francisco. It's very late for you. Well, you might not be. I mean, you might be regularly staying up until the early hours of the morning. But we're really grateful that you've joined Kevin and I on the next 100 Days podcast. Thank you.
No, I just wonder there. We talked to Ricky about who would you sell this organization to? But is that the exit plan here? And that wasn't Google's exit plan. Google went through the IPO route and became one of the biggest traded companies in the world. Are we
Yeah.
seeing a future Google there?
Oh, I in its own way, yes, very much so. I think so. I think he. They'll have bumps along the way. I mean, you wonder how easy it would be for another competitor to do something similar. And so, from that point of view, it needs to build robustness to the model. But he's ahead, and he's got more movement. So there's a good chance that Ricky and his partners and the venture capitalists in this company are going to do extremely well. And I love the focus that they've got, but also you brought this out, but basically the focus that they've got new things that maybe Alibaba or anybody else for that matter just doesn't bring to the market. And I think there's a lot of mid-market that's going to sort of evaporate. And I think their moment in time is just right.
I think it is. I really like everything I've heard this morning, and the barriers to entry bit does bother me, and it bothers me all over the place with AI. That while AI is so powerful in terms of giving the user answers, and there's definitely a lot of IP goes into training the AI, we both know that it is not difficult to build AI apps because AI can build itself.
Yeah, I
And
think there's, yeah, I think he's a long way.
that's the other thing that you've got to consider in this sort of business venture. How easy is it for a competitor to come along and say, hey, me too?
I think it would be quite difficult, but I think it won't be, well, first of all, it's going to be costly. And to build the relationships and the knowledge and the kind of the things that he's got to start off with. But yes, it's got to be a threat to him. But I do think that it's something that he can get beyond. And it's the way in which his business will evolve. So where he is right now in that kind of track that says, I'm doing it in this particular way, he could potentially move slightly and get an even richer seam, or he might get a bigger, he might be drilling for the right kind of pool of oil, etc., by shifting the focus, slightly. And I think that for me, he's very impressive as a young man, and he is a young man. And what he's doing for the world, I think is brilliant, especially for the small and medium enterprise level business. You know, they don't have the money to spend on big ERP systems. What they do have, though, is SourceReady.com, and for what is it, a couple of $100 a month? You just can't get that in a person. Never mind, but having that ability to do the things that you might need for a whole range of product sourcing. Wow.
Yeah, but Graham, even hire the people. You suddenly decide that, oh, I've been buying this thing from China because of this regulation or that regulation. I can't anymore. Are you even going to be able to hire the person that has any detailed knowledge about where else to source it from?
There's so many things going in his favor at the moment that I think he's got he's going downhill, as in He's got the momentum, and he's going fast, and probably go faster and faster and faster. But I just hope he keeps control of this and keeps doing the right things. But I was very impressed with Ricky Ho from SourceReady.com. Well, today, Kevin, I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.